Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide, the Civic Media app. I'm Todd Albaugh. It is Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2023. Welcome back to the big show, hour number two. And we are going to get right into it because it's a busy hour. Just a couple of minutes, we have Richland County Board Vice Chair Sean Murphy-Lopez joining us to talk about the Richland campus closure and the listening session that was yesterday for State Senator Howard Markline and Tony Kurtz and a large contingent of Richland County folks. At the bottom of the hour at 9:30, we have Luke Mathers, co-host of Dueling Tangents here on Civic Media, will join us for our Tuesday Tangents. We like alliteration here. So it's usually Tuesday Tangents at 10:30. However,
With Todd.
And Luke. See, Luke needs to, maybe his middle, we're going to say his middle name's Tony. Then it'll be Tuesday Tangents at 10:30 with Todd and Tony. But no, I'm not sure what his middle name is. But anyway, we had to change the schedule around because at 10:30 today, we have Jason Stein, the research director for Wisconsin Policy Forum. He's going to be in and help us try to understand this proposal by legislative Republicans on a flat tax and what it really means to Wisconsin taxpayers. So Jason Stein's in at 10:30, Luke's at 9:30, and coming up in a moment, we have Sean Murphy-Lopez. First of all, a quick weather note for you today across Wisconsin. First of all, in southwest Wisconsin, RC land, WRCE to be specific. Today, showers, some patchy fog, high of 36. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low of 34. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and 35. A winter storm watch is in effect because we could see 4 to 8 inches of snow by the time all is said and done around Richland County Wednesday night into Thursday. So be aware of that. Wausau, WXCO, Bull Falls Radio Land. Today, a chance of a wintry mixed weather. Patchy fog, driving not ideal, a high of 36. Tonight, patchy fog and a low of 24. Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high of 32. They might get 2 or 3 inches of snow up to Wausau on Wednesday night. Then in beautiful Amory, WXCE, Lake Air Radio, a chance for snow today, a high of 34 up in Amory. Maybe a half inch possible. Then tonight, cloudy skies, a low of 24. Tomorrow, Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a high of 30. And Wednesday night, they're not going to get that much out of this storm, as most of it's going to go south of Amory, but maybe a couple of inches of snow up in northwest Wisconsin. Been talking about this issue yesterday, the proposed closure of the Richland campus. Yesterday, Howard Markline, state senator of the 17th Senate District, and Tony Kurtz of the 50th Assembly District, both representing Richland Center and the Richland campus, showed up for an overflow crowd at the Richland Center City Hall to hear from citizens. One of those was Sean Murphy-Lopez, the vice chair of the Richland County Board, representing the Friends of the campus, and he joins us now live from Richland County. Mr. Vice Chairman, good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
How are you
great
doing?
To be here again.
Well, great to have you. Thanks for making time for us this morning. First of all, just your overall impressions of yesterday's event.
A lot of energy in the room. It was a little electric, I'd say. Mm-hmm. It was a packed crowd. It was difficult to get in. More speakers than speaking slots. It was definitely, I don't want to say the crowd took our senator and assembly representative to school, but they definitely had some very pointed words for them. I think the overall feeling was, why aren't you representing us on this topic? This is a bipartisan issue. It wasn't just one party in the room. I knew prominent people on both sides of the aisle who were there. And we had a lot of questions where, you know, just like you all say on your show, you're looking for the truth. We're looking for the truth about why this is happening to us in Richland Center. And we're really not hearing answers. Now, we heard a new answer yesterday from Mr. Markline in interviews afterwards. He gave to TV stations. He didn't give these answers to the 100 people who showed up. But I've got some follow-up questions with his answer that he gave about why he doesn't think he has the power to help change this decision by the UW system president.
And we'll get to those in a second. I guess I want to first ask, because I want to be fair, and I was not in the room, and you were. it's my understanding that neither Senator Markwein or Representative Kurtz answered any of these questions specifically. He just kind of took a very few notes. Did he make any remarks to the crowd, to the group as a whole, or was he just sitting there silent the whole time?
Mr. Markwein just thanked people for coming and thanked the mayor for allowing the listening session to be held in City Hall.
Okay.
That's all we heard from him. Mr. Kurtz said a little bit more. He showed some interest in coming to the town hall meeting that the community is having on January 26th.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. We played last hour before you came on. We played your comments that were put together on behalf of the Friends of the Campus group. I was struck by how well it was crafted, how the group came together. And also, you made the point, you just said it again, and I think it's important to reiterate, this is not a one-party issue. This is not a group of progressive Democrats in Richland County saying, we need this institution. Because when I drive through town, after years of working in politics in Richland, or working and volunteering, you kind of know whose house puts up whose sign, right? And as I drive through town, it's one of the most impressive things in the county as a whole. I'm seeing Save Our Campus yard signs in yards of very... These people had Trump signs in their yard, a couple of years ago, or Tim Michaels yard signs. And I also see them in signs where I saw Tony Evers yard signs and Joe Biden yard signs. So, you know, of all things to bring people together, this issue transcends those issues.
I think one of the last speakers we had yesterday or toward the end of the listening session was talking about how he was anti-abortion, pro-gun rights. We had another conservative issue. And then he was pro-campus. He wanted to save the campus.
I love it.
That was a great illustration, I think, to us.
Hang on, Sean. We got to take a break. Back after this on the Todd Allbull Show on Civic Media.
Go on, take the money and run.
Welcome back to the Todd Allbull Show, the Civic Media Radio Network. It is always about the money. Never forget that. All comes down to the dollar sign. Quarter after the hour is the time and the temperature sign on a Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2023. Joining us this hour, Richland County Board Vice Chairman Sean Murphy-Lopez talking about the proposed closure of the Richland campus and the listening session that was yesterday for State Senator Howard Markwein and State Representative Tony Kurtz. Update the viewers, because it's been a while since you've been on, and I think it's important, and we'll talk about this meeting coming up in a bit. It's important not just for our listeners in Richland Center, but also in Amory, which is near Rice Lake, and you have the UW-Barron to your campus, and over in Wausau, you have, used to be the Marathon County campus, now it's, I believe it goes by UW Stevens Point, Wausau. This is an important state issue, first of all, because of that. Secondly, because both Howard Markwein and Tony Kurtz, who sit on the Finance Committee, have said on our sister station, WRCO, in an interview with Ron Fruit on the morning show, that they both feel this is not going to be a one-off. They both feel that this is going to visit other two-year campuses and perhaps four-year campuses across the state. So update us, if you will, please, Sean, on what you know in terms of just where the Richland campus situation stands, because last I heard, Interim Chancellor Tammy Avedovich at Platteville was supposed to have her plan ready to go, I believe, by the 15th or 16th of January, and here we are today at the 17th. What do you know in your role as County Board Chair? What have you been updated in terms of the overall situation of the campus?
Well, we haven't been updated at all. We don't know what's going on. We've taken it upon ourselves, a couple of members of the county board, to attend some of the open public meetings that UW-Platteville has hosted with their faculty senate, I think they call it.
Right.
And they were soliciting feedback from that group on what the transition plan should be for the UW-Richland campus, but they haven't solicited feedback from the community.
So let me stop you right there. So they're soliciting information from the UW-Platteville student faculty group on what the transition plan should be for Richland, but nobody's actually reached out to you as the Vice County Board Chair of how that transition plan should happen.
Correct. No, they have okay. Not. And, you know, they want to close us down, so it's probably going to be an awkward conversation if they do reach out to us. But, you know, I think the community here has a lot of ideas about how we can revitalize our campus. And they have really never reached out to us about that. They've always come to us with their ideas, and those ideas clearly haven't worked. But I don't want to put all the blame on our parent campus, because a lot of this belongs with the state leaders. I mean, they're our policymakers. Mm. They decide what they want the UW system to look like as a whole. And I think we can see through the past 20 years of how they have funded the UW system that they want the UW system to shrink. And the way they decided to do this, and they as a large group of legislators, governors, UW Board of Regents, UW system presidents, they decided that the way they're going to accomplish that shrinking is by going after the UW colleges, which are largely in rural areas, areas with small cities around the state, like you say. And so what they've done is they've systematically taken away the staff and reduced the funding for these 13 colleges around the state.
Is it fair to... Go ahead, sorry.
That's what we're starting to uncover and get to the truth of. We've got a meeting with the 12 other counties this afternoon at 5 p.m. Supervisor Gentis and I, our county board chair, I believe is going to be there, our county administrator. We're going to have county board supervisors, administrators, executives from around the state, just sharing what's going on at each other's campuses. Wausau, that campus, their enrollment has dropped 73% in the last 10 years. They've gone from 1,100 to 300 students. So we're not the only ones in this boat. We're the first ones to be closed, but we want to start talking to those other campuses and start suggesting and feeling the energy there. Do they want to start advocating at the state level for retaining these campuses? Because if we don't retain these campuses, each county, each of these 13 counties are going to be stuck with about 5 to 7 buildings, empty buildings. And in a county like ours, we don't have that many buildings that the county government owns. You know, that's probably close to half of all of our buildings. So what are all these other counties going to do if the UW system comes after them, too, if the state does this?
I think this is extraordinarily smart. And it shows great leadership, because when the colleges were their own entity and had their own chancellor, that was part of the power of those colleges, because they were spread out across the state in a lot of different state senator and assembly districts, both Republican and Democrat. And so you had that power of a statewide coalition, basically. And for you to start rebuilding that, I think is just extraordinarily smart, not just from a practical sense, but it's smart politics. Because if this starts becoming a state issue now, right? If it's not just Southwest Wisconsin, if this is a state issue, suddenly more people have to pay attention. So that meeting's coming up this afternoon at 5 o'clock with all 12 other two-year campuses.
That's right. Yep, we've invited all of them. I've had a lot of RSVPs, so hoping for a good turnout there. And I think a lot of us, you know, I can't speak for them, obviously, but I've talked to people from all 12 counties. There's two cities as well who own campuses around the state. And I think a big question out there that we haven't had answered is the state going to honor its, basically, I would call it their 2040 commitment to these 13 branch campuses or colleges? Because what I mean by that is each county has a lease with the UW Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. And that lease was about 75 to 90 years, depending on the county, from what I'm hearing. So the state agreed that they would provide a branch campus or a college campus in each of those communities for that long. And so we've acted as if that's going to happen in a lot of cases. There are capital projects that are going on in other counties and other campuses. And some of them have told me they're starting to question whether they should do those or not. Because is it worth spending the people's money on those buildings if the state isn't going to follow through on their promise? So we've got a lot of questions right now for the state, I'd say.
I want to talk about messaging for a second, Sean. I thought you guys did a great job locally. I know there were a couple of Madison TV stations there yesterday. The word is getting out. I had a conversation with someone who used to be in politics in Madison. And this individual spoke to another prominent person, which I don't want to name right now on the air, formerly in media and now a very big business person in a statewide sense, and leans, I would say this person is a moderate type of Republican, not a crazy Republican at all. And she brought up the issue of the campus, and he basically rolled his eyes. He said, oh, they're just complaining about not having enough money. There's nobody there. They should just, you know, I don't see what the issue is. And she said, you know, Dale Schultz is on top of this and is advocating. And this other individual knows Dale very well. He goes, Dale Schultz? And she said, yeah. as she started explaining what was going on. And the individual started to kind of like get it. So how do we get the message out that this isn't just a bunch of locals whining because, you know, they didn't get their way? This was a systemic problem, as you pointed out, that's been underway for years and has really, is it fair to say, accelerated since 2015?
Well, I think we have to uncover the truth and we have to follow the money trail. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I filed an open records request 2 weeks ago with the UW System Budget Office to find out what the budgets for each of these 13 UW colleges has been for the past 10 to 15 years. And until we see some of that data, I don't know if we'll know the whole truth, but we have to show people, I think, the evidence.
Exactly.
You know, we have to build a case and say, this wasn't just about student enrollment decline. I hear this all the time. It's demographics. It's demographics. Mm-hmm. The UW system as a whole has lost 12% of their student body in the past 10 years, but we lost 85%. Mm-hmm. And so why is that? What's going on here? It's something different. It's not just demographics and it's defunding.
Exactly.
And if you defund things, people will start to leave. The employees will leave. The students will leave. The county boards will start to not believe that they should be putting money into those campus buildings. And so that's what systematically has been done. And we have to show the evidence for that. And that's up to the people. We've got to dig this information out. Our representatives, the people in power, they're not doing it right now. So we need to hold their feet to the fire and say, this is what you've been doing with the money.
And you're exactly right. That's why I respect you so much in the role that you're doing. And I hope that County Board Chair Marty Brewer, and I hope that Mayor Todd Copper, all of Richland Center and other city council and county board people remain on the same page and hold the fire to the feet of some of these people like Howard Markline and Tony Kurtz and others, Travis Tranel and Todd Novak in Southwest Wisconsin, because you're right. We deserve answers. The taxpayers of Southwest Wisconsin deserve answers to this. I want to make sure we get to a couple of things. A, have you heard anything more as County Board Vice Chair, or do you know, has there been any further communication from President Jay Rothman at System on this to you guys?
No, there's not.
And see, here's the game that I find, Sean. You tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. What we heard yesterday basically from Howard Markline on television was, well, you know, these people, they give me too much credit. You know, I really don't have much power, and this is a decision that's made at System. And then all we've really heard at System is, well, we don't have this. It's declining enrollment, and we don't have money. So what I said earlier is, I think we need to get these guys in a room, either literally or on paper, and say, hey, President Rothman, if you get the money from Howard, will you save the campus? And hey, Howard, if the system says that all they need is the money, will you make the motion to finance? That's what it comes down to.
It does. So I've sat on our finance committee for the county for 5 years now. If a finance committee wants something to happen, what they do is they say, I would like to see a line item in the budget. I want it to be for, say, the UW colleges across the state, and I want it to be for this dollar amount, mm-hmm. and I want you to fund this. So we do that at the county all the time. We decided we want to do a comprehensive plan. It's in our budget now. Mm-hmm. That's our decision as policymakers at a county level. I know that's what they do at the state level, too, because I've opened up their budget books, right, about 100, 200 pages long. I went to the UW system. They have line items for specific things. I know he has the power to do this, and a lot of us do, and we just need to keep explaining that to people and showing people how that works, because right now, that's not truthful to tell us that he doesn't have the power.
You're 100% right. I'm not going to do it right now. I can read off a laundry list of things that Dale Schultz and Cheryl Elbers got for Southwest Wisconsin when they were just members of Finance Committee and not even the chairman. I want to give you time, about a minute and a half left. Another town hall meeting coming up on the 26th of January.
That's right. We're going to do a town hall meeting on the UW-Richland campus. I'm really hoping that Assemblyman Kurtz comes. He said he was going to check his schedule, so we're crossing our fingers that he'll be there. But I think what we're going to focus on at that meeting, we have to do some planning for it here over the next week or so, is we're going to be saying, what's the job to do over the next few months? And let's start figuring out roles, who's going to do different things, make sure that we're actually proving to people that we need this campus, just like your grandmother did back several years ago. I listened to the rebroadcast of her interview that Ron Fruit did from 2006.
Yeah.
They had to go around. They had to sign up students to prove we needed this campus. I think we're going to have to do something similar. So we've got a job to do. If anyone is interested about what's happening, please come to the town hall meeting.
26, what time? Any time yet? Do you have a time? We'll have the time.
I'll have to get back to you on that. We'll have the time. Remember.
Sean Murphy-Lopez, Vice Chair of Richland County Board and part of the Friends of the Campus. Thank you so very much. You're doing God's work. The energy is incredible. You're welcome on this show anytime. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. Stay with us. We have Luke Matheritz from Dueling Tangents next on the Todd Allball Show on Civic Media. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. Time of the temperature sign is now 9:33. On the Civic Media Radio Network. Time for an early Tuesday Tangents with Todd and Tony. That's what we're called. What's your middle name?
Jameson.
Oh, I thought maybe it was T.
No, it's not a T. Right. Not a T. Sorry.
I like that. I like Jameson,
thank
though.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm a big fan of it myself. That's very except good. When, you know, I hear my mother say it in a tone that is... Luke Jameson Mathers, then I'm going to know I'm in trouble. But I like my middle name, too.
It's a cool name. Here he is, Luke Jameson Mathers, joining us live, co-host of Dueling Tangents and operations director here at Civic Media. Going to talk to him about some tangents. Fitting, because I also get off on a tangent now. And by the way, thank you. I got invited up to the big leagues yesterday. Oh. I got to be a fill-in co-host for Brian Kelly, the co-host of Dueling Tangents with Luke. He was on assignment in a hitherto undisclosed location.
Yes.
And I was asked to fill in, so thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you being so jumping to the call because
anytime.
I always feel like sometimes I have to coerce individuals into things. It's like, hey, like I know this may not be especially. You had already done 3 hours of radio for the day, and I was like, hey, and I was like, I don't know if Todd's going to be open to this or not. I was like, let's see if Todd's interested, but and you were like, yeah, absolutely, and I was like, oh, thank God. I didn't even have to pull an arm, like, twist your arm, pull any teeth, anything like that. It was
because this is like, to me, Luke, it's my dream job because, you know, to get paid to come on and just talk for an hour, like I'd be sitting back there talking anyway at my desk? You want to pay me for that? Sure. I'm game anytime.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I feel bad because you promoted me on social medias today before my appearance here on your show. I didn't even get around to any promotion
I don't always either. It's something that's I don't really do New Year's resolutions, but it's one of the things for like my show. Like I want to do a better job at that.
Yeah, getting in that habit is. It's important, but it's also difficult to do sometimes, and I know it's something we're all working on.
Yeah, little by little.
Yeah.
But yes, I got off on a tangent earlier this half hour because I promised our listeners that I would have information for them, and then I forgot to give it. So very quickly, we had Sean Murphy-Lopez on the show, Richland County Board Vice Chair, talking about the Richland campus closure. A couple of things to button up on that. Sean got me the time. There's going to be another town hall meeting on the Richland campus in Richland Center on the 26th of this month. January 26th, big day. That's our big giveaway, $1 million day here at Civic Media. That's going to be in the morning, the $1 million giveaway. More on that in a second. But then at 6:30 that night at the Pippin Conference Center on the Richland campus, a town hall meeting open to the public. Would encourage each and every one of you to go out and do that. We will try to cover it as well here at Civic Media. Also, I had promised you, I'm throwing out the name of Jeff Barrant, who is somebody that I worked with. He was a former chief of staff for former state senator Bob Jauch. Good guy from the Democratic Party. And went on and is now, I believe his title is now Associate Vice President of UW System State Federal Relations for the UW System. So my point in all this was that Howard Markline has said, well, you know, I didn't know anything about this campus closure. I basically found out the same time as everybody else. Nobody asked me. But let me just tell you here. What Jeff Barrant makes, because it's public knowledge, $143,745 as of 2021. Probably got a nice little raise since then, because I think he did. That was like when he was state director. Now he's state and federal relations director. So Jeff's job is to be a liaison between the system and the legislature. That's his job.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me, Howard, than a guy making $143,000 plus, whose main job is to be the liaison between the president of the system and the legislature, never gave the heads up to the co-chair of joint finance about a campus closing in his own district. That to me is either A, it's unbelievable and it's a lie, or B, if it's the truth, if I'm Jay Rothman, I think, what am I paying you $143,000 for?
Yeah, that is an excellent aspect to point out. I think it's also really important that maybe in this discussion we mentioned that Markline wasn't doing any legislating since the first week of March last year. So he could have been briefed on this matter, but he had his feet up and they weren't really working very hard up there at the state capitol because Republicans were content with gaveling out of regular legislative sessions about what? First week of March is 9 weeks into the year.
Yeah.
We're into the third week now. So what you've done from now since New Year's, times that by three, and that's how hard the state legislature worked last year.
Not a lot.
Not a whole lot of productivity coming out of the Republican-led legislature. And when you see this, the just egregious nature of saying, well, I found out when you guys found out after the legislative record that Republicans have had over the last 4 years because they're upset that this state elected a Democratic governor and wants them to have, you know, some divided government and expect compromise out of these legislators. And no, we just see apathy and inaction and sitting on their hands and saying, well, I just found out about this the same time you did.
But Lou, you spent a little time working up at the Capitol as well. You've been.
I didn't get paid for that. That was an internship.
you were around that atmosphere, and yeah. I'm sure you picked up on it. In my years of state government service, one of the pet peeves about any legislator is to be surprised by something. They never want to hear about something from someone else. I mean, by golly, I better be hearing about this from my staff or from an executive assistant in a state agency. I don't want to be reading about this in the news media, or they'll be hell to pay. And for Howard Markline to assert that it's the co-chair of joint finance mm-hmm. in the majority party, that the liaison that's in charge of being the person delivering news from the system never contacted him or his office, that he just found out about it. I find that an astonishing claim.
Yeah, it's baffling. It's baffling because you've already alluded to it. It's either that means the liaison was very, very bad at their job, or somebody's not telling the truth.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling it's probably more the latter.
I would think so. We're going to have Jason Stein on, a great guy. He used to work for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, as a reporter, and is now the research director for Wisconsin Policy Forum. He's going to be coming up here at 10:30 talking about the flat tax for Wisconsin, the proposed flat tax.
What flat tax? Last fall, Republicans distanced themselves very, very far from that policy proposal, saying, ugh. We would never do that if Tim Michaels was elected governor. That is absurd to tie that policy to his campaign. And then, lo and behold, a couple days into the new year, that's where the Republicans are. Shocking. Again, feeds back to the, I think somebody's not telling the truth, Todd. I think somebody's not telling the truth.
Right. I mean, I just don't understand how we're going to, I mean, I'm no expert on taxes. That's why I'm inviting a guy like Jason on to help us understand this. Mm-hmm. Because, hey, look, I'm all for being fair and laying it out there. Let's look at the pluses and minuses. But I just, again, it's the Republican Party thinks we're all just gullible, that we'll just have this flat tax, everything's hunky-dory. Oh, we're all going to pay the same thing. It levels the playing field. Well, it means that millionaires and the richest of us are also going to pay the same thing.
Yeah, the average tax cut for you and I believe, is for middle class individuals. You're going to save about anywhere from, I believe, like $1,500 to maybe $3,000 in taxes every year. The average millionaire in Wisconsin, I believe the number was pegged around $112,000. $1,000
right.
that they will save. More than what a middle class income is, they save on their tax burden every single year if you make more than $1 million. So yeah, if you want to take the Republicans' definition of quote unquote fair, I guess. But again, they go under these guises that, well, Republicans cut taxes and that's good for individuals, and they don't really necessarily have the policies that will deliver what folks need from their government. Cutting taxes over and over again until there's nothing left means we are losing money for our public schools. We are losing money for our roads. We are losing money in so many different areas that government can't provide the functions like a Richland Center campus for the UW system. And so it is absolutely something that needs to be discussed. I think the folks over at the Wisconsin Policy Forum are very, very smart people, and I agree. It's good to have conversations with them because they know the tax numbers a lot better than I think you or I would ever claim to know.
Certainly me. I can barely get my taxes filed, okay? That's the truth. It always astonishes people because I can look at a multi-million dollar state budget and I can make sense of it, but, you know, to look at my own checkbook or to figure out my own taxes, I'm just a wreck.
Yeah, I think goodness for like TurboTax or H&R Block right. and all that stuff.
Oh, H&R Block, yeah.
Those things are very helpful because I'm also the, oh, it's April 14th. Oh, I better get started on that kind of person.
We have until the 18th this year. They extended to the 18th.
Ooh.
I'm very excited.
That must mean the 15th falls on like a Saturday or Sunday or something.
Exactly. But I'm going to try. I'm really going to try this year to get it done early and get it filed so I get that stuff done.
There you go.
I'm going to bug you about it.
Oh, yes, please.
There I think you've said that.
I appreciate that, Aaron. Absolutely, 100%. Coming up on Dueling Tangents today, anything in the pipeline you want to share right now, or you want to make it be a surprise? Just tell people
It's a little too early for a plan, so let's just say you tune in at 2 and you'll be as surprised as I am right now.
But sometimes that's the best show you could possibly have because there are days when I don't have a guest and I wake up at 5, my alarm goes off at 5:30. I might not get out of bed till 5:45, but I look at my phone and I'm like, okay, I guess that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
And that's one of the cool parts about this genre and about this this company is we're allowed to kind of just go with the flow and bring people the latest news.
Yeah, it's always exciting. And I was telling you about this yesterday. There is some beauty and some pain when it comes to only having to prepare for an hour because at one point it's like I want it to be relevant to the day. I want to be able to discuss what's happening in the here and now.
Right.
I don't want to plan out too far in advance. I do try to book guests and have important conversations, but a lot of times it's like, oh, like yesterday we had a great conversation. The show was a lot of fun. Flew by immediately. It was like, what do I need to plan for then? If the show's that good, it's just going to fly by. And then other days when it's a slower news cycle and there's not, say, a great conversation with a guest like yourself, it drags on a little bit. And I'm like, why did I not prepare better for this? But we get through it all the same. And so it is a gift and a curse to only have to fill an hour. But I always enjoy that. Callers always like to contribute. They help lead me off on a tangent every now and then as well. But it's a lot of fun. Today, I know one of the things we discussed and kind of in this same vein, there's a national proposal from Republicans in the House of Representatives to float out doing away with income taxes and just levying a massive sales tax for everybody. And I think I want to pull on that thread a little bit more. Yeah. There's some sound from that over the weekend that I didn't quite get
to. I'll put it this way. This is not a new idea. I remember when I worked for former Congressman Scott Klug back in the 90s, there was the Gang of Seven, which included John Boehner and Scott Klug and Fred Grandy, I believe, from Iowa, former Love Boat star, played Gopher on the original Love Boat, was in that caucus as well. I believe John Kasich was in the Gang of Seven.
Really?
And they did, they did actually a lot of good work. They closed down, there used to be a house post office where all these congressmen could get stamps and mail letters. What happened was they would buy thousands of dollars, not all of them, but a guy, Ross Sinkowski, from a Democrat from Illinois, purchased thousands of dollars of stamps with his house account from the House Post Office, and then went to another post office and cashed them in. and it was stealing thousands. So they closed down the House post office. They closed down the House bank. Did a lot of bipartisan work.
Don't congressmen have franking privileges? Don't you send mail for free as a member of Congress?
To your constituents, but there was also this kind of weird House post office.
Yeah, there's a weird need for it if you could already send the mail.
That's why they got rid of it. But anyway, they had this idea of a national or a sales tax whereby you – so the theory is that if you buy more expensive things, you pay more your taxes. Well, we'll take a break. We'll get Luke's thought on the sales tax.
Yeah.
Do you want a sales tax and lower property taxes or income taxes? We'll talk about it after this on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. Time is now 9:50 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maybe you're listening to us in WRCE Richland Center, WXCO Bull Falls Radio in Wausau, or up in beautiful Amory, WXCE Lake Air Radio. Or maybe you're one of the cool kids like Luke Mathers who knows technology and you downloaded the Civic Media app on your smartphone. You went to other stations, you scrolled down to WRCE News in the Center, you clicked on that puppy. And then you can listen to us all day long.
Yeah, or I even like to go hands-free. I don't even listen on the phone all that often. Hands-free. I use the – we got a nice new little Alexa, Echo something in the kitchen. And it's great for timers when you put a frozen pizza in the oven. She'll let you know when you set that timer. But it's also great when I'm getting ready in the morning because then I will tell my smart speaker to play WRCE News from the Center on TuneIn. And just like that – the Todd Alba Show in my kitchen in the morning. So that is the.
And who doesn't need that in the morning?
Yeah,
probably a lot of people.
A little Pat Crite Loaf to kick it off in the 6 and 7 o'clock hours. And then from there on, I think I left it running. So the dog is listening to us right now. He may be hearing my voice
the dog's
in the kitchen.
Where's Luke?
Yeah, Remy.
Where's
Remy
my master?
Oh, that's now I feel bad for saying his name because now he's probably if I absolutely left it on. So he just heard his name.
Calm down, boy.
And he probably just jumped off the couch and ran into the kitchen.
Poor
he's
dog.
Probably very confused. I am so sorry, bud.
He deserves an extra treat when he go home tonight.
I will. And we'll play an extra round of ball or something like that. But listening on a smart device is an excellent way to do it. CarPlay is enabled as well. So if you've got CarPlay in your car, you can have the Civic Media app and play it from there. There's many, many, many different ways to listen to all the different programming we provide across the Civic Media Network.
Flat tax. Moved a little bit to this national proposal of a national sales tax. I was saying this has been something Republicans have been talking since the 90s. Again, the concept is that if you have a higher sales tax, you get rid of income taxes or what have you, or lower them, that it's based on the theory is the selling point is you're actually penalizing the rich more because they're the ones buying the multi-million dollar yachts and the big McMansions and the fur coats and the Gucci bags. And the more expensive thing you buy, the more tax you're going to pay, and that the middle class person will pay less because they spend less. That's the theory.
That's the theory. And in theory right now, if you make the most amount of money, you should be paying the most money in taxes.
Well,
the way the income tax works. And we don't see that in reality, Todd, because we find out that Donald Trump paid $0 in income taxes. And it's because of the accounting practices of moving away depreciation and losses from one year to account for other. And it's just a bunch of smoke and mirrors to be able to shift the tax burden onto more middle-class folks, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Because if it was truly what they thought was a good way to go, Republicans had unified control of the government in 2017. Mm-hmm. They had the presidency, mm-hmm. Donald Trump. They had the House of Representatives, and they had the Senate. If they truly thought that this was the best practice and something that needed to be implemented, they could have done it then. And they didn't. It wasn't a priority. It is just now a talking point to make it again feed the narrative that Republicans want to cut your taxes. So you should elect more Republicans because Republicans will cut your taxes. And then when in practice they had unified control of the government, who did they cut taxes for in 2017? For the middle class, the tax cuts sunset, I believe, this year or next. And for the wealthiest tax earners, those tax cuts passed by Donald Trump or signed by Donald Trump, passed by a Republican Congress, those are going on until they're repealed by another Congress. And so who they're fighting for, who Republicans are fighting for, are very evident in the tax policies that they pursue when they have power. This is just a whole bunch of smoke and mirrors, in my opinion.
I agree with you. And I think it's always interesting to your point that Republicans could have done this when they had complete control in 20. A lot of things that they talk about, like when I was in state government here, you know, we kept talking about local control and letting decisions be made at the local level. They believed that until Scott Walker and the Republican legislature discovered fracking. And then they wanted to completely ignore local controls and ignore the locals and let the environment be raided with this fracking stuff. And high-capacity wells, another issue, taking water and getting involved in local issues. So that's on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, also interesting, when Democrats had complete control here the last couple of years, you know, oh, we're all for immigration reform, we want to have immigration, never did it.
Yeah.
Same thing on, you know, on I thought the first order of business should have been when Republican or Democrats had complete control, fix the frickin' election laws. Fix the voting laws in the state to address these 17 states that passed these state issues that
they tried. H.R. 1.
They tried.
H.R. 1 was the first bill.
They couldn't get it together.
Yes, I agree.
And that's the point, is that to what you're saying is that, you know, yes, on tax issues and local control, Republicans are hypocritical. But it's always fascinating when one party gets control, they're never actually able to do everything that say, well, we were in control. We do. No, you don't, because it's so fractured.
Well, and that's one of the glorious aspects of I think the Biden administration so far is he's been able to exemplify the areas where progress can be made on these issues and find bipartisan support for them and pass them. It was a record 2 years for legislating under the last Congress and the Biden administration. I don't think we're going to see that for a while. It's going to be kind of a dark age again for bipartisanship now that Republicans are in control of the House. But I agree. Immigration reform, I wish I would have been able to see some progress on that these last 2 years. But there's also only so many hours in each day, Todd. So it's like they did get a lot done. Yes, I wish they could have done more. I wish that I could just blame it on the filibuster for why H.R. 1, the voting rights overhaul, could have been passed. But Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, two Democratic senators, chose to, I guess, stake their brands on not voting for something like that rather than actually pass it and see progress for protecting elections and how we elect our representatives here in the United States.
I was listening to a devil's advocate yesterday afternoon. Dom was out, and so your oftentimes cohort and guest host William Walter was on the show yesterday with Crute, and even William said that he was impressed with what the job that pleasantly surprised, I think is what he said, by what Joe Biden has done. And now, of course, the big decision coming up about whether or not Joe Biden announces he's going to run for re-election. About a minute left. You want to talk about that, or you want to talk about sports for a minute?
Let's talk about sports.
All right. You watched the game last night. Dallas, the poor kicker, missed, what, four field goals or four extra points?
Four PATs, yep. he went 1 for 5 then. He hit the last one.
He did.
There was a fourth down there where Mike McCarthy was like, no, we're not kicking a field goal.
Yes, I know.
We're not kicking a field goal.
And they scored a touchdown.
And then that touchdown is when he got his first PAT of the night. So I thought that was pretty interesting that they didn't elect to go for two after scoring. He's just saying, on fourth down, we're going fourth and four, too. Like, it was like a medium-sized down, and they decided to go for it.
Dallas looked unstoppable last night. Dak Prescott had a great game.
Dallas looked really good, but I think it's a lot to do with the way that Tampa played as well. Tampa kind of played the way that they've been playing the last couple of weeks, where their first three quarters are abysmal, and then somehow they're like, oh crap, we're actually playing a football game here, and we should try to get some points on the board, and they scored two touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
Luke Mathers, host of Dueling Tangents, will be on the air across the Civic Media Radio Network at 2 o'clock. Tune in then. Thank you, Luke. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Todd.
You're welcome. Back with more after this. Stay with us. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.